Well, we are live, folks. Good morning. Good Tuesday morning. Welcome to episode 3761 of the Survival Podcast. And a promise from Spirico Claus has come to pass. I told you for the past week, I guess, that things were going to change a little bit for the studio temporarily. And I told you yesterday that that was probably the last day with the old studio looking the way that it did anyway. And here I sit in my wife's office for the next, I would say, several weeks while I continue to gut my office, scrape my roof, rip out my carpet, redo the flooring, redo the back wall, and rearrange things and completely set up a totally new studio. That has now begun. And moving all the studio equipment in here, at least enough of it to get by with, that was eating the frog. That was the part that I didn't want to do. I don't care how confident you are in your technical abilities, disassembling and reassembling an entire studio worth of equipment, computers, cameras, everything. Not fun. You're always like, well, I put it back together and it doesn't work. But bro, you should be able to figure it out. You built it in the first place, but it's still something no one looks forward to doing. And there's certain computers that had to come over here that I do my editing on and everything, because that place needs to be vacated and empty. The only thing in there will probably be a small stool that I can move around that the modem sits on. I'm not relocating the modem and the other networking equipment that actually powers the Wi-Fi for the home. Other than that, everything's got to come out of there. Not really anything to do with today's show. Just need to explain the background to long-term viewers of the live stream. And with that, what are we talking about today? We're talking about homestead projects for the winter season. This is the type of show that I do at least, if not every year, I do one of these at least every other year. And always about this time. This is just a great time to breach this subject, to be thinking about kind of the downtime that's going to come. But here's what's got me thinking about it this year. This was a unique year for us. We had a lot of fun on our very long, extended, luxurious cruise. But the summer itself was at first really like one of the easiest we've ever had on the homestead, and then brutal. And I mean brutal. And what I mean by that is this spring into early summer, we got more rain than we usually get, and our temperatures were muted. Even when, you know, you're hitting like when I lived in Pennsylvania, you hit 95, it was like, oh my God, you hit 95 for a high here in the beginning of June. And people are like, it's extended spring, man. I mean, especially if you hit 95 and then you begin to come back down, and by like 9 o'clock at night, it's actually lower in temperature. Not how it works here. A lot of times we have that heat island effect from Dallas-Fort Worth Metro mess. And, you know, if it's 101 at like 6:30, it's 103 at like 9 o'clock at night. That did not happen. So we didn't get the brutal heat. And we didn't get the lack of rain. So everything was green and happy. And then what happened? July came and the more mild temperatures were like, see you in October. And the rain was like, see you in October. And the 100 plus degree days came and the lack of rain. And when I said lack of rain, it wasn't just me this year. It was everybody around me. The year before, I felt like I was cursed. You'd see a storm come in and it would split, go around us and come back together on the other side. This year, the whole damn area turned brown. My property the grass didn't just turn brown. There were large swaths of my property with no vegetation this year. The people that came were like, wow, you guys, you talked about the drought. You handled it pretty well. We got like a super heavy rain about a week before the workshop, and grass appeared as if from nowhere. People were like, well, if that's the case, did you see? No, I didn't see that. The seed bank kicked in. So all the hard work we've done on the property over these years has built up the resiliency to come back, but this year was brutal. And when you have a brutal year, you find a lot of things that didn't work, and that helps you figure out what you want to do for the next season. So that's kind of the mindset that I'm coming from today. And we're going to go into a bunch of stuff today, and we're not going to talk about what I'm going to do. I'll give you like a list at the end of the show, just a quick bullet point list of things I'm going to do. I am big on believing that my job as a podcaster, it's kind of twofold. One is to be alternative media. That's why occasionally we do a show where we talk about things that are going on in the news, economic impacts, political impacts, things like that. This time of year, I really try to do as little of that as I possibly can. And I've been on a news fast since the workshop. The week leading up to the workshop, into the workshop, and after the workshop, I have very little idea of what's going on in the world. Bitcoin crashed to $90,000. Wah, I don't care. And some Trump says some stupid shit, and other politicians says some stupid shit. And there's a few things going on that I am aware of, and an answer I'm trying to get for you guys about something right now. Probably I'll put it out next week because it doesn't affect you in the near term anyway. But otherwise, I have just been off of that. So the alternative media thing is not really what I'm working on this week. Well, the other thing to do isn't to tell you just about my life and look at all the wonderful things I'm doing. That's you know, YouTube influencer creator stuff, right? It's actually to help you in your life. And so I try to focus more on how do you figure out what works for you on your homestead or in your life, whether you have a big homestead or a farm or like an urban rural fringe little enterprise like I have, or just a suburban homestead, like right in the middle of suburbia, but you still do your little homesteading activities. That's what we're focusing on today and how you can figure out how to use this time to your best benefit. And so that's where we're coming at things today. Before we dig into that, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Anton's Land of Biltong, also known as Biltong at USA.com, because life is too short for average. How much do I like Biltong? I love Biltong so much that Anton pays me for his sponsorship with Biltong and Drew Wars. And I keep saying this, I really need to reach out to Anton and mix up my order a little bit, start adding some of the Calabanazi sausage to that as well, because that stuff is awesome. Biltong is one of those things that's largely misunderstood today in America. If you ask somebody what Biltong is and they use the word jerky to describe it, other than it's kind of like jerky, but it's not jerky. If they really make any direct comparison, they don't know what Biltong is. Jerky is dry. Biltong should be somewhat moist. Biltong is like you take a red meat and you cure it like a capricola or like an Iberico ham or something like that, except since it's beef, it's much quicker to do. And it is a traditional South African method of preserving red meats, particularly game meat, but it works just fine with other red meats and ruminant meats like beef. And it is fantastic. And that's what Anton uses as beef. Check it out today. And, you know, the beautiful thing about Biltong USA is when you order Biltong, not only do you get great tasting Biltong, you get a fair price on a fair amount. There's a lot of people selling Biltong that ain't Biltong. It's also like, you know, like an ounce and a quarter for like 10 bucks or some shit. Don't do that. Check out what Anton has. Great deals, great product from a guy that knows how to make Biltong the South African way because, surprise, surprise, he is from himself, South Africa. Next up today, Start 9 Sovereign Computing. Start 9 allows you to take your privacy back. Start 9 allows you to run a little box that's actually a server right in your own home. You can run a Bitcoin node or a Bitcoin Lightning node with it, so you can be your own bank with it. You can also run completely encrypted end-to-end private messaging services and a ton of other great things available in what's called the Start 9 Marketplace. It's really easy to install and set up, really easy to configure, and gives you a great deal of flexibility and allows you to take back your technology, to access files from anywhere in the world over Tor, to manage your own system. And remember, there is no cloud. Whenever you hear there's a cloud, the cloud, the cloud, it's just somebody else's computer. Either you're managing your own services or somebody's managing for you, and that means somebody else can censor you or monitor you in ways that you may not want to have done to you. And if you are looking to get something for Start 9, please remember, they do a huge discount, 9%, which on a product like Start 9 is a lot of money if you're an MSB member. Now, on the MSB thing, just another reminder, the MSB, my Member Support Brigade program, is on sale right now for $35 a year versus 50. That's 15 bucks off. The discount code is Turkey, and the discount applies to renewal. So if you sign up today, when you renew next year, you will get that price locked in as long as you stay a member and do not cancel. And if you get canceled because like the merchant account or your credit card expires or something like that, no problem. We'll get it back for you. If you cancel, you have to go back to full price if you want to come back. So that's an incentive to stay a member on auto renewal. But it'll give you discounts to over 70 companies that you're probably buying products like that they sell from anyway. You use the discounts, you get your money back, you profit, and you support my show. And again, this time of year is a great time for sales, so I do have it on sale for you. at $35 a year. With that, let's go ahead and dig off into this topic today. I want to tell you that, just a reminder, many of you have heard me say this many times, but I have one eye that I can actually see out of. I am by myself in the studio on these solo shows. There's a little thing here with the chat, and everything that comes in to the chat is from Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. If you're on any of the other platforms, when you comment, I don't see it. If you have a question for me or something you want me to comment, put either the word question or comment in all caps, and then be very clear about what you're asking or asking me to comment on, and I will try to do it. I will not see them all. Sometimes I don't, and I try not to look too much at the comments because I can, you know, I know my own limits and I can get distracted at times by people making weird, stupid comments. So anyway, with that all knocked out, let's start talking about some of the things going forward. But again, real quick, as a quick couple announcements, my book, Laws of Life by Jack Spirko, which is subtitled Ditch the System, Design Your Life, is on sale. Knocked down a few bucks, both the hard copy and the Kindle, for, I don't know, a few weeks. When I get tired of getting new sales, I'll shut it off for the rest of the year, but it'll make a great gift. And tomorrow, I wanted you to know, Chef Ken Daniels will be on the air with us to talk about making Thanksgiving kick-ass and great. I figured we'd do that this week, so you have, you know, a couple days plus a weekend plus next week leading into Thanksgiving to take all the tips Ken and I give you toward the Thanksgiving meal with you into the Thanksgiving holiday. And, you know, Chef Keith and I did a show back in 2010, and I've rerun that show for 14 years. I thought it was time to upgrade that. So Chef Ken, I think, will help us upgrade that. So if you want to make Thanksgiving great, don't miss tomorrow because it's going to be a great one. And the only way you're going to be able to ask questions in real time anyway is to be here for the live stream. All right. So I want to talk about, first of all, why is now the time, like, to do the winter planning? We're not in winter yet. The first day of winter is actually officially December 21st, right? That's the winter solstice. That is the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. It is where the sun, you know, comes to its lowest point in the sky, stays there for 3 days, and on the third day rises 1 degree in the sky. And you take from that what you will, but that is the case. That's part of a lot of artifacts in ancient world that track the sun and stuff like that. And it is, you know, that time of contemplation and darkness. It is that time when it gets cold. It's that time when a lot of things go on pause. But we're not there yet. You know, we're pretty far out from that. We're over a month still from Christmas. To many of y'all that have a lot of things to do to get ready for Christmas Day, you're probably pretty happy about that. But it's going to sneak up on you quick. And that's the thing. This is that time of year where we begin winding down, heading into that holiday season. Productivity in offices tends to slack a little bit. And unless the company's got real problems, the boss is kind of even like they're doing it too. Everybody kind of doesn't quit working or anything. They just kind of chill a little bit and coast a little bit into that end of the year. Everything gets a little bit more relaxed or a little bit more energetic, depending on what you're doing. You're getting ready for family coming in. That can be stressful. But in general, there's lots of little lulls in our time. And that's a good time for planning. And it's also a time of the year where whatever you did for the year has been done. You're in final harvest mode. If you have a garden, you might already be in the cover crop, which I am. If you do cover cropping, or you might have already put your beds to sleep for the winter, or you've put the winter garden in. If you ran livestock, you have probably slaughtered or soon will be slaughtering all your culls going into the winter season. Super busy leads to then chill, right? And that's a great time to sit back and think, and it's a great time to reflect on what the prior year was. And so I have four what's that I always tell people to use at this time of year to plan for next year. Four what's, but they're all about the present and the year leading up to this day right here where you're making this determination. Number one, what worked? What did you do this year or continue doing this year and maybe tweak and improve a little bit and you're just happy with it? You're like, you know what? I'm going to tell you that I did these things and these things worked fantastically and I'm going to keep doing them. So that's one question to ask yourself. Because when you know what worked, you can then know what to double down on. You can say, like, this new plant that I tried, for instance, worked. Like, that's how I felt the year that I first discovered the Indian serpent bean, which is actually a melon or a gourd, depending on how you look at it. Like, I was like, this thing is just these giant long things. They taste delicious. They're multi-purpose. You can't buy them anywhere. Like, and when I did that first year, I'm like, so I'm going to keep growing these. And instead of growing like one trellis of them, I'm going to grow like two or three trellises of them. I'm going to expand that. The same thing when I first discovered mouse melons. I'm like, well, these things are kind of cool and cute. They're like a little cucumber thing. And they're also known as a Mexican sour gherkin. They look like a tiny baby watermelon. Like you could put them in a G.I. Joe's hand and like hold a giant little striped watermelon. But when I figured out what they were like when you just used pickle juice and did like the repickling thing, I'm like, okay, these are kind of it. We're going to grow more of these, right? Or, you know, it can be a livestock thing. Like when we decided to switch our main focus from chickens to ducks, we kind of never looked back from that. What is the thing that you did that worked that you either now want to enhance, accelerate on, or just systemize to the point where you're going to just keep doing it? And maybe you're not going to even try to improve it. You're just going to try to like put it into the plan on a permanent, ongoing basis. You know, that would be like my grandfather. Once he figured out that 18 tomato plants did everything he needed every year, he started about 30 tomato plants. A couple of them could die. 18 went in the ground and all the rest got given away. Right? Something that you want to like just keep doing or tweak. Then what didn't work? What just didn't work? That you're like, okay, but I can fix it. Like, I did the thing, and it kind of worked, but it didn't work, but it's still worth doing. There's a reason to continue on this journey. You know, maybe you tractored chickens, and it worked, but it didn't work. And what I mean by it didn't work is you ended up feeling like, even though you only had to do it for somewhere between 8 and 14 weeks, it was too much work. It was too hard. You lost more birds than you wanted to lose. You didn't like how I'm processing, but something about it was just not really, didn't jive for you. But you liked the end result, and the end result could have been better. So it didn't work, but it was viable enough that now you can sit back this year and go, okay, what are all the things I hated about it? What are all the things I liked about it? How do I move it more toward the thing? Is this, if it's worth doing again, how do I do it again? And at the end of the year, I don't just say it worked. It worked well, and it would now be something that my next year evaluation, it moves to the first category, just flat out worked. Yeah? Then the next question is, what was clearly – was there anything that was a clear losing play? Like, I just don't want to freaking do this anymore. Like, this was a bad idea. I wish I had never done this. And cull that out of your life. What worked, but so poorly – and gave you so little satisfaction that even though you can technically say it worked, it didn't work for you. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Identify those things. Destroy them with prejudice. And either just let them go or replace them with something completely different and try something new. And then the last one is, what did you most enjoy doing, eating, and having this year? Because you might find that I really liked eating this thing, but it was a lot of work to produce. And it's actually like, I really want to keep this in my life, but I'll just buy that one thing, right? What did you enjoy having in your life this year? And how do you have more of that? And what did you enjoy doing? Like, of the things that you built tasks into your life, not only did it work, you actually enjoyed it. Like, I have to tell you that since my grandson and my granddaughter have gone back to regular school, I miss them. And it was kind of cool having my grandson take care of the ducks 5 days a week and I didn't have to, which is mostly like feeding them. And that was actually the granddaughter's job because that was the easy one, and dumping and moving and refilling the pools. But I realized after I had to start doing it again for myself how much I actually love doing it, because it's a time of the morning where I'm out there. And there's no distractions, and I'm either listening to music or an audiobook or a podcast, and I'm spending time with the animals. and they're happy that I'm doing it. So that's something now that might, you might be like, I freaking hate that. And then you need to move that out of your life. But what were the things you enjoyed doing, having, and eating that were part of your homestead life? When you answer those four what's, it starts to get really easy to define what you want to do for the next year. I want this shit to go away. I want this stuff to get better. I want this stuff systemized to the point, and I'm just going to keep doing what I've always done with this other thing. And it just comes, the four what's live to the four categories of things that you're going to do going forward. Now use that to plan your next steps. Do more of what worked if you need to. Like if you planted a certain vegetable and it worked and you ended up with a surplus beyond what you could use and you gave some of it away and you don't want to turn it into a commercial venture, just keep, don't do more of it. It's working. It ain't broke. Don't fix it. Leave it alone. Do not touch. It worked. So only do more of what worked if you need to or if you feel it will benefit for you, you know, for you. And then fix or abandon what failed. Sort the things that came out of your what didn't work and what I didn't like, what was my losing plays, and then sort them. I still want this to work, so I'm going to give it another try. This made me freaking miserable. I'm never doing it again, right? And this almost worked, and I can tweak it. Real simple. And then decide what you want to do next. I think that every year, as we grow in our walk, we should try at least one new or two new things. In the very beginning, be careful with too many things at once, but once you kind of settle in, you've got kind of a rhythm going and you're getting what you expect out of your homestead, at least more of what you expect and less of what you didn't want. You know, it can be something simple. I'm going to try a new plant. I'm going to try a new, you know, new plant. I'm going to either grow from seed or I'm going to try a new perennial. I'm going to try something different with my livestock. I'm going to try a different animal. I'm going to try adding a different economic plank to my homestead. Maybe you're going to start building or manufacturing or creating something. Maybe you're going to start selling product at farmers markets. Maybe you're going to start selling product online. Maybe you are going to build a new piece of infrastructure. But I think that every year we should be doing one or two new things on our homestead, something we have never done before, and experiment with it and going really slow. And the best way to make a new endeavor pay off is to have a good plan in place to implement that system. And again, that's what we should be doing right now is thinking about that. And then we need to start setting priority. How do we set priority with this? We want to look at each idea, concept, and thing that we're going to do, and we need to know how much time and money they're going to cost us. Some things, you know, when I get to my list, I'll explain better, but I have some things that I want to do this year that aren't really going to cost me any money, but it doesn't mean it won't cost me time. In other words, I have the resources I need to do the thing. I already have the supplies. One of the projects I'm going to do, I'll tell you about at the end of the show, is my new aquaponics system in my shop. It's pretty much already built. There's some enhancements I want to make to it. I might need to spend $15 on a few odds and ends for it, but the cost is done. Like basically I need to build a light stand and stuff like that. And I pretty much have everything, but it's going to take time to do. It's going to take, you know, it's going to take a Saturday to get it exactly the way that I want it. And proper for long-term happiness in my life. It might take another half a day to do one more thing to it, right? So that's a time-only thing, but it's a time component. And then there's other things that I want to do, like remodeling my studio, which is a top priority for me right now. It's going to be a significant expense. I'm actually going to do it on a fairly low-cost budget, but, I mean, I have to spend money to buy stuff. I don't have flooring. I have to buy flooring. I don't have paint. I have to buy paint. I have painting supplies, but I don't have the paint, right? I probably am going to upgrade my desk. I've had the same desk since I lived in Arkansas, and it's a bit it's a bit big for my office. I need length. I don't need depth, and I don't need big wraparound shit. It's an IKEA desk. when I bought it, the office that I had, that I had leased space in Arkansas, was the piece of the space that I broke off as my studio was about twice the footprint in square footage that my current office is. So it's bragdom nagium, right? Like it's an annoyance. And so it needs to be nice looking for the new studio, because when I set the new studio up, you notice today there's much more view of what's behind me because the camera's a bit further away. That may even increase a little bit more. So I want everything in the shot to look nice. So there's going to be some expense absorbed in that. It's also going to take me probably, you know, if I quit working, got all this stuff ready and staged, and said, I'm going to treat this like a job that I bid as a handyman, I can probably do all the work in 3 to 4 days. I'm not going to do that. So it's probably going to take me 3 to 4 weeks to get it done. So that's my kind of time management, money management priority list. But we also need to then develop a time and money budget for the entire period. And depending on, you know, who you are and how you manage things, if you are a project manager type, you might build yourself what's called a Gantt chart. You might just drop everything into Excel, which could then be used to make a Gantt chart if you know how, but it could also just give you some timelines and things like that, cost estimations. It might be you just pick up a notepad and start writing it out and say, it's going to take me 3 hours to do this for it, and then start planning it out like a project manager. Because what this will do is reality check your ass before you decide, this year I'm going to do all these things. And at the end of the year, you've done 10% of all these things and none of them to completion. As soon as you map it out that way, you say, well, that's going to take money and time. That's going to take time. That's going to take just money. And you might end up doing something like this. Like, this probably won't happen to me, but if I get, like, as I look at the whole mapped out timeline, I may outsource some of that office reconstruction. Like, the things that are going to take me the most time, but I can just write a check and make it go away, I might choose to do that. You might take some projects and say, as much time as that's going to take, and then what's the benefit of it once it's done? You know, I'm not going to do that yet. And you'll also be able to do something I think is really important for your personal motivation. Make your first project something you can knock out in very little money and very little time, and do it first. And make your second project a significant investment of one or the other, like, but specifically time, because when you invest the time in across that, you see that project come to fruition, you feel really motivated, and then everything else will kind of fall in line after that. Just a second, there's nothing wrong. I'm just trying to fight a sneeze here, or even let it happen. There, good. All right, so then we're also going to then say, well, what will these projects do for me? What will they do for me? And once you have, like, your map, then just make a list, right? And just make a straight list and just rank the benefit to you by whatever means you want to rank it. You could do a 1, 2, 3 with 1 is, like, that will do a lot for me. 2 is medium and 3 is bottom tier. You could do a 1 to 5. You could do star rating. You do whatever you want. Do a check mark, check plus, an X. Check mark is it's be good to have. Check plus means I really, really want this. This will benefit me a great deal. You know, and an X means I want it, but if it doesn't happen, it's not. Whatever it does that for you. That'll help you start arranging the priority level of the project. So now we're thinking like a project manager. We've budgeted time and money to each project. We've ranked its importance to us in our happiness and our benefit, and then we formed a priority list. This is like yesterday when I was talking, I was saying a few times during the show, these are the kind of things that they should teach in school and never will. I'm going to say that again. This is the type of teaching. Think about the fact that your child, you know, or when you were a child, K to 12, I figured it out. It's some ridiculous amount of hours. I want to say 11,000 hours, but maybe I'm misremembering. But it's something like that, that child spends in school until they're a young adult and they get that great big commencement address and told, go out and slay dragons, right? Go to college, join trade school, join the military, go pack boxes at a warehouse, do whatever you got to do. But it is time to go do the things. And when I look at the lack of life skills that are conveyed, maybe they know that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, but unless they're going into like biology of a certain kind of biology anyway, do they really care? Do you know how to manage your time? You ever notice in school how much time they tell Johnny, you need to study harder, but they spend like no time actually training Johnny what time management looks like, what a study plan looks like, what program management of his academic career looks like, and they wonder why Johnny's a fuck-off. They tell Johnny to learn shit he knows he's never going to use, and they give him no skill set or no development in the process of planning how to learn and allocating time. And they all say, well, we only give them half an hour of homework every night, and they send the kids home with a half-hour homework, but they have six teachers, and it's three fucking hours of work. And the parents sit there going, I don't know what to do at school. I don't know why he doesn't try harder. And Johnny's going, I don't know what to do. This basic format of setting priorities, setting time management and cost thresholds and benefit thresholds, and then placing things in order. But, you know, you just might find out if you educated children to do that, they'd be like, yeah, I don't give a shit about this subject at all because my career progression will not require it. So I'll do just enough. Like, this is the shit that I did in school. But not everybody has it innately in them. So don't expect them to teach you. As an aside, you might want to teach that to your kids as you're learning how to do it for yourself on your homestead. And this show's universal, right? This applies to everything you want to get done in your life. You only have so much time. You only have so much money. Bluntly. You have to always prioritize where your time and your money goes. And again, some things require a lot of time. Some things require a lot of money. Some things require both. It's dependent upon the situation. And then, you know, set that priority, develop your timeline. What does it look like between now and whenever you consider this time over for you? To me, I consider this kind of free-based time where I can do the new things and stuff like that to end about mid-March. Because by mid-March, I should have all my plants into the garden with enough reserves if I get a late frost. I always try to cheat. So I just grow more than I need in starts. And then that way, if that late frost comes in, then I can just replace the ones that don't make it. Or a heavy windstorm comes in, it snaps, and I can replace the ones that don't make it. And that doesn't mean I just put it out on March 15. If I look at the forecast and it's very clear that we're not done with old man winter yet, then I'll delay the set out, but I plan to do my set out somewhere between the 15th of March and the end of March, that 2-week period. So that's about March 15 is when I kind of say this is the point where if it was going to be a winter project, it was done. And it just coincides with the calendar that March 21, spring equinox. So 1 week later, calendar says it's not winter anymore anyway. And that means that if the projects tail into March, I have to start making some decisions. Is it okay for this project to go into the big ramp-up period? Do I need this? I start calling based on the reality of that winter quarter. Again, this is project management 101 type of situation. I can't do all the things. So what are the most important things that will do the most for me that are reasonable and can be gotten done in that time frame? And what can I kick that I won't really hurt myself by kicking it? And what can I just cut? Say, you know what? That's not happening this freaking year. Like, this really is kind of a downtime project thing. I don't really need it for next year. I have the other things I want to get done. I'm not going to do it. And you can't be afraid to cull things. And if you beat your estimates, which you probably won't, but if you do beat your estimates, you can put that kind of in the alternate category. You put that in, if I get all the other things done, then this thing's still sitting here, but I'm not betting on it. If that makes sense. Then make sure to schedule things by dates. That's the only way you're going to be able to do this. I am going to begin Project X on this date, and I expect to be finished with it by, you know, date. Begin on date A and expect to be done by date B. Q, be honest with yourself. When you say this thing is going to take 3 hours, put down 4. This step, right? You know, wrecking out all the carpet in my office, I'm going to say that could be done in an hour. I'm going to put down on that one because I don't want to do it, 4, right? And I'm going to need a 4-hour period to get that done. And even I'll probably get it done in 2. Great, now I'm ahead of schedule. Overpromise under promise and over deliver, not just to your client and your customer, to yourself with your timelines. Remember, you're not submitting a bid here. You're not worried. Like, this is not like a contractor submitting a bid to a client where you're worried that since you went high on time, you're going to lose the job on labor rates to a competitor. You're doing this for yourself. So go ahead and add 20% on most things, on cost estimates and on time estimates. This will keep you honest with yourself. And if you do manage to beat the estimate, good for you. Maybe some of those alternates get done this year after all. Again, this is about project time management and coming at this like a project manager of yourself, because no one's going to do it for you. Now, what am I going to do with all of this planning this year? What are my lofty goals? And I'm going to tell you right now, some of this stuff is probably going to get canned, or it's going to get farmed out, or I'm going to do part of it and somebody else is going to do it, or it's not all going to happen. Number one, remodel of the TSP studio. And this is something, again, I keep kind of going, I'm going to do all the gut work and the demo work myself. But I keep thinking maybe my best thing I can do is when I want to do the flooring. I know I can do the flooring. I've done it before. Painting's not that expensive to have somebody do. And it's the kind of thing that when you have somebody do it, that all they do is paint, they do a really good job and really fast. And so it's a big part of me thinking, once I get that room gutted out, get somebody local, some local handyman type guy, go in there, scrape the ceiling, reprime the ceiling or whatever, and paint it. And then all I got to do is flooring and kind of rebuild everything the way that I want it. And that's probably what I'm going to do. So that's an example of, I'm going to take this project, I'm going to save a ton of money by doing some of the more labor-intensive stuff myself, but I actually like laying floor tiles and laying like wood flooring and stuff like that. I don't like painting. Painting's not my thing. It's not fun for me. And I'm also not great at the trim work, like your floor trim. So what I'll probably do is pry off all the existing floor trim, buy what I want for the new floor trim, and have somebody come in. I got a handyman, does a lot of work for me. He does great work, you know, really nice miters and stuff. And have him, after I do the flooring, let him do the trim. So that's probably how I'm going to break that one down. I'm also, again, working on that new aquaponics system. I think this is a really cool system that I've come up with. Quite a few years ago, I knocked together a really simple system based on a single 7-gallon concrete mixing tray filled with Leica, which is the little expanded marble clay thingies, because they're great for aquaponics, and a 40-gallon breeder tank. And I've done a lot with it. I never really intended on doing anything with it. When I first built it, it was just so when we had classes here and people came here, since it was really small scale and easy to look at, and most of my big systems run on a very similar siphonless ebb and flow system, a 2-penetration ebb and flow system that allows the water to fill up. A stand-up pipe sets the height of the ebb and flow system, and when the pump shuts off, the water goes back through the hole it comes in, out the pump. If you're sitting there going, I don't get it, that's why I built the system, because since it was small, you could get up underneath it, you could see where all the water went, you could see the bypass valve, the flow control valve, everything. So it's actually super simple, but difficult to explain. When you look at it, you're like, oh, so I built it for that. Well, then I had this little indoor system with a grow light over it and a little tray, and I started doing things with it. I started cloning ginger plants. I started cloning turmeric plants. I started doing all my sweet potatoes in it. Just take a sweet potato, jam it into the pebbles, and it starts sending up slips. Pull the slips off, and when the slips grow, you can make 1,000 slips from one sweet potato. It was great. And I want more space to do more of this. At the same time, I started working with these crayfish called marbled crayfish. Marbled crayfish are also known as self-cloning or self-replicating crayfish. Crayfish in a small-scale aquatic system, like my biggest system is like 5,000 gallons, and it's full of fish that would eat them. So I'm mostly doing something like a crustacean in tanks that are around 100 to 150 gallons. Crayfish are difficult in this environment. They fight with each other. They don't get that big, so you need lots of them. Breeding conditions have to be right. They have to go into certain conditions once they're gravid to raise their babies and all this other crap, and they need to get into mud, and that doesn't work in a tank. And I find these marble crayfish, and they're a food source. And like in Madagascar, they're like in every ditch. Like, instead of worrying about invasiveness, there's hungry people in Madagascar. They're like screw it. Let's grow these things. Everything eats crayfish. They're not going to become a problem. Fish eat crayfish. Raccoons eat crayfish. Humans eat crayfish, etc. So I find these guys, and they're really popular in the aquarium trade, and they replicate in aquariums. Well, my natural systems are way more conducive for that. But what I want is a battery for babies so that I can keep restocking my outdoor systems if I have any kind of catastrophic loss. So I started growing the marble crayfish in the 40-gallon breeder. They were doing fine in there. So now my new system is a 55 that I removed from the studio. I don't have any tanks in there anymore. It's out in the shop with 2 7-gallon tanks. Obviously, double the footprint for cloning. And that's all done. And all that's left to do is some little tweaks. Like I'm going to build these little bundles of half-inch pipe so the small guys can go in there and the big guys can't. This will let me put my hand on the backside, hand on the front side, lift it out, drain all the babies into transportation vehicles so they can go outside and continue to populate the outside and continue to grow the population. The lighting that I have on, I just had a big old school shop light that I threw on top of the tank. Well, I'm going to put a nice low profile that will be out of my way so it's easier to work the tank. I have the light. All I have to do is install it. I'm going to build a stand so that over the grow beds I can have 6 of the 2-foot plant lights that I recommend, which I also have. I can repurpose some other systems with the Zazzy stuff where you can lower and raise the lights based on the height of the plants. Then I'm going to develop some level of like greenhouse plastic over a coat for it, even though it's indoors, because it still freezes in there. That plus a simple aquarium heater warming the water, and then the plastic comes over the tank, and I have a frost-free plant starting and cloning system. So that even if I'm doing 6-packs, I can take a 6-pack of, like, let's say tomatoes and work them down into the ebb and flow bed. And when they get big enough, I can then pull that 6-pack out and move them to another area. But in the very early part of the year where you need warmth to get those young seedlings off to a good start and you don't ever want them to dry out, they're in that ebb and flow bed. They're constantly nutriated and watered. And just simple, pick it up and move it and you're good to go. So that's just a very simple way to do a lot with a little bit of resources. So that is a very high priority system and it's 80% done. And I had most of the material. The only thing I had to buy was some Leica and an extra pump because I didn't want to use one of my spare pumps because I always want spare pumps that I standardize on. So I had all the parts. I had everything repurposed and just made that system. And that's what I said. Pick something easy and useful and low cost and do it first because then, like, I got one of them done before I even finished planning. Pretty cool, huh? Next is removing more of my dead and damaged trees. I've stopped trying to put everything on life support here. I did heroic levels of watering for 10 years here. I planted thousands of dollars worth of trees, most of which are dead. And even the ones that aren't dead are not very productive. This property is just not conducive to what I want. I've had to accept that. And so I have a lot of trees that, like, they're limping along and the best thing to do with them is remove them. And so I have continued to remove them and turn them into biochar, and I will continue to do that. So that's like an ongoing winter goal. I got nothing to do today. It's not that cold. It's not that hot. Grab a saw and take out some trees that you've noted that need to go. That's an easy one, so I won't belabor it. Making my annual bioreactor batches, right? So every year, usually in January, I run a small half-day class, and we build 2 or 3 bioreactors. This year, I'll do the same thing I always do. It will be infused with biochar, which it always is and has been ever since I started making it. But this year, the difference is since I'm now growing mushrooms and making my own mushroom blocks for growing mushrooms, this year, the bioreactors, as soon as that temperature comes down, are just going to get stormed with multiple species of mushroom spawn, spent blocks and blocks that I just have made and don't have room in the boom room for. And if one dominates, fine. If multis come up, fine. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's just going to be this massive fungal hit. Yeah. Joe Timmons says, I'll paint and lay floor, install trim, but I hate popcorn. So I do too, bro. That's one thing about having somebody do it. Anyway, that's another thing that I'll be doing is those bioreactors with massive fungal infusions this year. That is an example of what works that you just want to keep doing, but maybe tweak. because I've always done fungal infusions in the bioreactor. The thing is, I've tended to do that about March, add the fungal, and by the time it proliferates enough to fruit, we get into our hot weather, and even with the moisture being added to the bioreactors, I get very little to nothing out of the fungi. I'm getting my old bioreactor, since I'm not going to use any of the compost in it now that I've done my cover crop for the year, my last bit of bioreactor compost, I got about a yard and a half in it. I capped it with new wood chips, and I just took all my spent blocks and threw them in there. And yesterday I got like two huge blue oyster mushrooms out of it. So I'm just going to do more. Like, that's just a tweak to what's working that we always do. That is a standard thing now. Every year we make the bioreactor compost, but it goes on the project list because it eats a day to a day and a half of work. Next up, I am going to eliminate probably some, maybe one, perhaps two of my aquatic systems outside. There's a lot of work that goes into maintaining those systems. I built them as ways of educating students, but also ways of educating myself. I don't need as much as I have. Every system has a pump that can fail. Every system has different quirks that you have to teach a house sitter when you're gone so that not everything dies if it fails. And every one of those systems draws power. And I feel like I've learned enough, right? I've learned enough from the experimentation that I now know what I want to be long-term permanent. And some of them are just going to go away. That's a hard thing because it's like, which one of your kids do you drop off a cliff? I birthed them all. I made them all. I created them all. They're all in some way unique. But it's time for some of them to either be repurposed or just go away. So that's probably going to happen this year. Because I want to, my primary goal that's a piece of, I want to optimize my property so that it's easier for me to leave. We are doing a bunch of different things to have more fun in our life as we get older while we still can, Dorothy and I. And we have had a huge blessing and that our good friends Mike and Teresa and their kitchen staff, Mike's kind of our main chef, Mike and Teresa, big help at all the workshops, have kind of been also our go-to home sitters. And they are relocating near Camden, Tennessee, like near John Willis's operation and moving up there. And I'm very happy for them. And they're like, well, we'll still help. And I know they'll still help when they can, but it's a big ask. Like, hey, we're going to go on vacation for 2 weeks. Can you come all the way the hell down here, leave your new homestead alone and babysit my place? And I've been spoiled with Michael because Michael has been here for every single build we've done as a class. Every single build. And the ones he hasn't been here for, he's been over here and had me go tip to tail with him. There's nothing that can go wrong here that Michael can't fix. And if he can't fix it, it's something that like I couldn't fix either for whatever period of time is required before you can fix it. And so that is a very comfortable thing to be floating in a boat in the middle of the ocean or, you know, on an excursion up into the mountains and have somebody like that on your homestead. Well, I'm losing that, at least to some degree. And so I'll have to rely on others for that. So with that in mind, I want to make that easier. I want less stuff that needs doing here. In an ideal situation, I want to get to a place where if the dogs went with us somewhere for like an extended stay, there could be somebody show up in the morning, do 30 minutes worth of work, show up in the evening, put the ducks to bed, do one walk around, check. And that's all that has to be done. And right now, that is not the way things work here. So I'm trying to optimize the property that way. And I don't know if I'll get all the way there this winter, but I want to get closer. This is kind of a work in progress over time, deconstructing some things and getting rid of some clutter and extra things. Things that are not directly homestead related, but for me, the whole thing's a lifestyle design thing. Like I built my whole life with like, this is our base of operations. And I run, that's why the podcast studio, it's not really a homestead thing, but it is a homestead thing, right? Well, another thing is I want to complete my draft of Laws of Life 2 before end of year and begin my next book, which I've already discovered while writing my book. And my productivity since the workshop has been through the roof on my writing. And it's because I'm doing something. And a few of you know what that something is, but I'm not going to talk about it yet because I haven't been doing it long enough yet. But I started a new habit right after the workshop, not the first day, Because the first day after a workshop, all I do is sleep and go in a trance through it. But I began doing it like the next day, and I've been doing it ever since, and it has lit me on fire. And I have gotten more written of my second book in the last 2 weeks, almost more than I had written up to that point since I started it this summer. And it's got me on fire, and it's got me really cranking out some incredible content that actually makes me feel like maybe the earlier content isn't good enough in that book. Like these last four chapters have been so good. I'm like, I need to go rewrite the others, and I know I can get that done because they're not bad. They just need to be elevated a bit. That doesn't mean the book will be published. That means that it can be handed off to an editor, and we can design the jacket and the marketing behind it and get that out early in the year. Like probably January, I'll be able to release that book. Love to do it before Christmas, but I'm not going to rush it. I rushed the last one because it got delayed so many times, and I went by the mantra of better finished than perfectly undone, right? Perfectly incomplete, like not good. This one I want to tighten, and I actually want to go back and fix even more of the first one, release it as a second edition so there's a set. But in this last week of writing, I have come up with the third book in the series, and it will not be Laws of Life 3. That's all I'll say for now. I'm super excited about it, and I think that next book will be like a 60 to 90 day project till the draft is done and it's ready for editing. And I want to tell you what I'm doing, but I cannot do it yet because I'm not ready to yet. I'm not ready to release the information about what I'm doing and say it's as good as I think it is because I haven't been doing it long enough. Okay. Make sure it's not like a flash in the pan thing, but it's pretty cool. Then I want to do, I talked about this already, but I'm definitely going to get several fishing trips set up for the TSP community. Some may be chartered and some just surf fishing trips. And I'm going to lock in dates and make plans and get those dates set up. Like on once it goes in the calendar, it's real. And start announcing those. And I may not announce anything until about January, but I will have the plans made. That's another thing. So is that a homestead thing? No, but it is a lifestyle thing. And again, the homestead is the nucleus of the lifestyle. I have a lifestyle business. It was designed that way. I could have a much larger multi-person employee business, trying to be mini Rogan or some shit like that. I don't want to do it. And I never wanted to do it. When I walked away from corporate America, I knew perfectly well what I was doing, and I built exactly what I wanted. But I made this the nucleus. I made this the nucleus. And I agree. There's a lot of discussion about popcorn ceiling. I agree with Roger here. He says, the only thing I like about popcorn ceiling is when they are gone. Playbit Patriot says, is that Texas or all over the fishing? That's probably going to be Texas. I'm not going to say something might not happen in Arkansas because I know a pretty good guide up there, but Texas is where I live, and it makes it easy for me to do like take a Friday off, which I already do, and do like a long weekend thing. Now, most of this is probably going to be in the Freeport, Bryan Beach area. I have a lot of confidence that as long as the conditions are right, that we'll have fun and we'll catch fish down there. There's a lot of reasonable cost lodging available. It's a great beach. You can drive on it, though there are some restrictions with that. You can really enjoy yourself down there. I'll just leave it that way. And there's always something to be going after and targeting. So that's what I mean. Florida, and can it include women? Well, it can certainly include women. Florida, we'll see. That's a trip. That's somebody taking care of the place. That's not just a fit. That would be like a piggyback thing. Like there'd be a day of fishing with Jack and the rest of it would be Dorothy and Jack telling y'all go home, right? Like that kind of trip is different. That's not me jumping in my vehicle and breaking away for a couple of days. That's differently. But I certainly miss Florida. And there's some good fishing around Jacksonville. I remember some special places that are probably still great and you might not even know about it, even though you've lived there your whole life. next up is we're going to keep land shopping. That's part of this new lifestyle design that we're doing. We are looking for a piece of property within about 30 minutes of Nicole Sauce's place in the Holler. And we're not relocating. I want to be very clear about that. That's not in the plan. And I'm not even hiding that where we really are type of thing. You know, like when I was talking a lot about snakes this year, people were like, you're going to get snakes. And I just gutted even the fish out of the office. Like, that's not happening. When I say it's not happening, it's not happening. But what we want is to have a place up there that we can maybe, when it's a bit hot here and we're not really in love with the place, pack up all the stuff for a couple months worth of living, including the doggos, and head up there and live up there for a couple months. And then maybe I go up there once a year to go hunting or fishing or something like that. Or when Nicole has something going on, like a workshop, instead of sleeping in her guest room, I have my own place. And I can do more to support her efforts with some of the things that she's doing if we have a place up there. So it's kind of a multitask thing. And then whenever that's a lot of the year we're not using it, it doesn't need to sit vacant. It can be an Airbnb for us, so it can create a cash flow. And, you know, we're looking to do something with a cash buy on that. I'm big on leveraging real estate, but in this situation, it's going to make a lot of sense for us to just own it outright. So we're looking for some land. On that note, I am working with some other folks and saying, hey, maybe we find a bigger piece of land and cut it in half, but more is better. And if you have the capital to go, and this would be like a raw land deal, most likely, and you'd be interested in maybe having a piece of land near Nicole. And again, you have the fight, like they're not like, oh, I like the idea. Like you actually can monetarily do it and you're serious. I'd be interested in hearing from you because the larger the consortium we can put together, if everybody's on the same page, the more leverage we have. There's no doubt that you pay less per acre when you buy more acreage. So it's an option. I don't want to push that too hard. And this is why, okay. It can get messy. So, okay. Let's say we found 100 acres and 5 people get 20 acres apiece. Woo-hoo. Well, not all 20 acre parcels are uniform, you know, as far as buildability. You need road access. We want a piece of property. Like off grid's great, but for what we're trying to do quick, I don't want to be off grid. I want water and I want electricity available from the road without investing a fortune. I don't want to spend, you know, freaking $50,000 on a well and wait 8 months for it, right? So we're open to it. And I guess the way that would work is you put together people. They say, this is how much I need. This is how much I could bring to the table with money. And if you find a property, then you present it to the group and people are like, I'm in or I'm out based on that. So you might want to. And then there's nothing that prevents, like, if a group within the group finds a piece that works for them and they leave from the rest of the group continuing to search. And again, that can get messy. That can cause hurt feelings. So I want people to be really thoughtful about it before you contact me about it if you're interested in it. But because I do have one couple that we are, and you guys know who, you know them. I'm not going to say who they are, but you know them. And we're working with them. And we may be able to make something work. And we may not. We're both adults. You know, we're grown-ass adults. Like, if we find the right place, and if it's bigger than either of us needs, and if it works out, and the numbers work out, and the property lines work out, and everything else works out, and we can go in together and be much stronger with a combined offer, we'll do it. And if we can't, and if I find something, I'm going to act on it. And if they find something, they're going to act on it. Nobody's going to have their ass hurt. If you're not that mature in something like this, I don't want to hear from you. I don't even want to talk about it. All right. Next, we're getting ready. Tom and I are getting ready for the relaunch of the AI course. And that's, you know, that's a very top priority because it's a moneymaker. People love it. It sells out fast. But we're trying to make it even better. And we're planning again on launching that. I think it's December 21st. I'd have to look at a calendar to be 100% sure, but it's the Monday of Christmas week is when we're going to do it before the shutdown. And that'll put a 2-week delay between sign up and start up. So I start on a Monday. It's an 8-week course. We want this every week to be a full week. And we don't want holidays in it. So we didn't want to start one now and run through Thanksgiving and Christmas. It would just be a nightmare. And it's also kind of like, as we were talking about today, kind of a little bit of a scale back and breather period for me. So I don't need another thing. But the good news, if you are a graduate of the first or second class, anything we enhance the next class with, you have access to. You get it for free. It's yours. If you want to be in that class, I cannot say this enough. Go to jackslaws.com. You'll see a little note about it at the top. When you see that little note, click on it. You'll see a page that kind of tells you what the course is about. I want you to understand something. I've only mentioned it on the show a few times. We had over 600 people pre-registered for the first class. We let 100 in. That dropped it to 500. Then it grew some. I think it got up into the 700-ish range. When we did the second class, it also sold out in a couple minutes. We now have over 800 people registered for the third class. Let me say that again. We have over 800 people registered for the third class. The third class will be 800 students. You can see why it sells out the way it does. I don't even market it hard. Go look at how hard it is. Like, it's not even in your face. It's not like a pop-up comes up or anything. And we have that kind of response to it. And the students who have taken it, by and large, have been incredibly pleased with it. The few people had some, like, even the ones that had a little negative comments, like, most of it was super positive. There are things like, I really want to know exactly how to organize my stuff. And I say in the course, like, as far as, like, organize your prompt packs, that's personal. Like, that's the nitpick level of shit. Like, we have one of our students here. It's beyond worth it in all caps. And the reason that I know it's worth it isn't just things like that. It's watching the caliber of work that comes out of these people. And again, I want to reiterate what we're doing with this is, yes, we're empowering you. We're giving you basically the ability to turn ChatGPT into me as a marketing consultant using my methods that I used to use when that's what I did for a living as a marketing and business consultant. Because it's not just about marketing, right? It's about marketing, but it's also about business operations. But the bigger thing is this is designed for small entrepreneurs. It's not that a person running a larger company or a person that was like the head of marketing or an operations manager for a larger company wouldn't benefit from it. But the people taking it are generally one-man operations, couples that run a business together, small family businesses, or maybe some of these one or two, you know, employees, which is the small agile business. The lifestyle type integrated business that we teach here that many people in this community have built. But what that does is we're building this community of people that all own businesses at some varying level of success and all have completed the training and are all part of this community as like its own sub community. That is incredibly powerful. That is incredibly powerful, having people that have the knowledge and a business and are willing to work with others. And I want to see more relationships formed out of that. So we'll be empowering that post-course relationship development. Tom and I are even kicking around the idea of maybe doing a live seminar series that would be an upgrade. I'm going to be honest. If I'm going to do that, it's going to be significantly expensive. But Tom wanted to do like as an upsell for every class. And I'm like, I just don't have the time in me for that. Because I'm not going to do like 1 hour. Oh, your time's up. I know you were talking about committing suicide, but we'll meet again next week as your you know, counselor or whatever. I'm not going to be that guy. So it'd probably be 2 hour seminars once a week during the course. What I'm thinking about is maybe running that cycle twice. Because we think we can do 4, maybe 5 of these courses next year. Maybe twice we'll do with the seminar series when it works best for me. But to have the upgrade, you can be in the current class or a prior class. So we're working in that direction, and we'll see where that goes. All right. Here's my question for you guys. There's all this stuff I have planned. It's pretty aggressive, and I think I can get it all done. If not all of it, I mean, it'll be like one of those items that's the lower priority getting worked out. I run a business. I run multiple businesses, honestly. I've got all this stuff going on with, you know, the homestead and family. What are you going to do? What are you going to get done this winter? What are your plans? Are you being ambitious enough? Are you being too ambitious? And well, I only have like 2 comments or questions that I have starred today. So while I'm doing that, if you're listening to this live, and there's a lot of people on this live stream, if you're listening live right now, even if you're doing like the tab thing or you're like multitasking and you're not really watching, you're just listening, jump over right now, get in the live stream, the chat, YouTube or Facebook or Twitch, all 3 of those, you can comment from, and I'll see it pop up here. Put the word comment or question in all caps And after I do these first two, if there's any there, I'll read them. Even if just like comment, I'm going to. And tell us about the things you're going to do, because it might give other people ideas. Okay, let's start off with Top W Cone here, who's an OG with TSP. Comment, ranking priority list is not do three things each day. It's a longer ranking. It absolutely is. I'm glad you pointed that out. Nicole Sauce is my three things. It's the three things you're going to do today. And they should be in the pursuit of a larger goal. But they're just simple goals. They're smart goals. They're goals that you can say, this is what I need to do this, and I can do this today. And you do it. And it's done. And it could be a step towards a long-term goal, or it could just be a thing that needs to be done that day. And I think that's an important delineation in between those two worlds. You know, a long-term strategic project management style goal is made up of lots of little individual goals. And one of the ways to really magnify the power of something like Nicole's My Three Things, have that longer-term goal in mind, have a list of steps that need to happen to get that goal accomplished. And when you're planning your day at the micro level instead of the macro level, and you say, well, I'm going to do this and this, and I need to do one more thing, and I don't really know another thing I have to do today, but I got this big project that's ongoing, what's the next step in it? Now that becomes one of your three things. It's incredibly simple, but it's incredibly powerful, which, by the way, Nicole's My Three Things, that's exactly what it is. That's why it's cool in the first place. The simple things that anybody can do take a minimal amount of time and planning to get done and are highly effective. Those are very, very powerful things. And that's why Nicole has come up with a very powerful methodology with this concept of My Three Things. So thank you for that, Top. I appreciate it. And then I've got Fred Lane with a comment. I remember you saying something about Buddy the Goose and how you would rather talk to Buddy the Goose than people around the corporate table. I forgot about Buddy the Goose, man. Thanks for that memory. We had this goose, and we didn't know if it was a female or a male goose. And I don't remember exactly how it worked out. I think we tried to incubate goose eggs because the Barnyard Mafia, the original Toulouse geese that we had, they were just assholes, and they also didn't have anybody that was a good mom. So we tried to just use our simple incubator and incubate goose eggs. And I think we put like eight in there, and one had a bad hatch and died. The other hatched, and she made it, and it ended up being a girl. That was Buddy. And then the other ones just didn't work. They just failed miserably. So we ended up with this one goose, one little gosling. And if you've ever raised fowl, you know that one bird does not work. So we couldn't get any other geese, and we really didn't want more geese at that point. So we planned our duck brooding for our new ducklings around her, and we raised her with the ducks, and she became Buddy the Goose Duck. And the reason that we named her Buddy is we decided that we didn't know who she was, and this was about Christmas time that we're doing all this. And of course, one of my favorite freaking Christmas movies of, you know, the big Christmas movies is Elf. And they find Buddy in the nursery, and they don't know his name. It's funny that Santa knows everybody's name, but they got to make the story, right? So he was wearing Little Buddy diapers, so they named him Buddy. And Buddy, you know, Buddy can be any name you want, gender neutral, right? It's not a real name. So we named her Buddy, and as they get older, they're not really easy to go male, female, but you can tell there's certain characteristics of a Toulouse goose, even though they're the same color, you know, like that's a girl. So we ended up eventually somehow with like a male Toulouse, kind of like a one-off as well. So we put him with her, and then we had the Barnyard Mafia of eight running around terrorizing everything. We had these two chill ass geese, and one was named Buddy. And the other one, we're like, well, what do we name the boy goose? Well, in the movie, you have Buddy has the girl he falls for named Jovi, I think. So, well, you can't call a dude Jovi, so we just named him Joe. So we had Buddy and Joe, and that's where the two goose ducks came from. And they hung out, and they protected those ducks. They stayed with those ducks. They were far more bonded to the ducks than the rest of the geese, and they were the goose ducks. And they also went down fighting, man, because that's when we had the coyote come in. We had that freaking chupacabra level coyote of sarcoptic mange. And both of them ended up killed by that coyote because they would not abandon the other ducks, and they tried to fight. And sometimes the spirit of the fight still cannot overcome a physical advantage, and we lost both of them. But you're right, I did say that. I would rather spend my time talking to my ducks and geese in the morning than going back to the corporate boardroom. And that has not changed. That has not changed at all. Let's see if we got anybody else commenting here. Packrat says, this needs to be the year for us to set a cabin. Long time coming. So ask yourself, as I say all the time, how can we? How can I? Develop a plan and start working on it. Do it. Don't let all the reasons you can't get in your way, because the reasons you can't aren't real. They're phantoms. If that's something you guys have decided, either you're individuals or just you, or if you're part of a couple, you've decided this is the thing that has to happen, then you need to just make it happen. Go for it, dude. I know that you can get it done. I know that you can. Lee Murphy says, start back up and finish my ultimate bug out off-grid self-contained art studio camper that I scared myself into stomping work. Lee, do it. I know you. You're freaking awesome. I've met you a couple times. If you want to do something, you can get it done. Go do that. And you like, you love doing your art, having a mobile art studio. Sure, it's bug out if you need to bug out, but maybe you can figure out ways to monetize that. I've never heard of that before. I'm sure somebody's done it, but I've never heard of anybody marketing pop-up art studio. Interesting. Maybe you could make it more than you're even seeing it to be right now. Either way, the magic question, how can I? How can I get it done? Drink, eat, learn. We know who that is, don't we? He'll be here tomorrow. Continue skill stacking, butchering an exotic game, incredibly hard work, no ego, just learning, Chef Ken. So let me tell you, Ken is going to be with us tomorrow to talk about Thanksgiving. And let me tell you one of the things I love about Ken. Ken is a guy, if I want to learn a new skill, I'll just go work for free or cheap. Whoever will give me the job, I'll go do it. And I'll be surrounded by other people that know how to do it. And by doing it a lot and doing it with a servant mindset, I'll get really good at it really fast. That's what he's doing with Exotic Game. He was just here this weekend. He came by. We had, man, did we do it up on Sunday. David and Mona, we had already planned for them to be here for a porch day. And I'm a big believer in having multiple guiding goals toward what I call a North Star goal. And I believe that one of those guiding goals should be a mastery goal, something you want to become a master of. But I want to be very clear what I mean by that. Not something you want to make a living doing. Something you want to do so well that you could put what you do next to a professional. And a person would say, these are of equivalent level. And that might not be like, if for me, it's cooking. That's my mastery goal, to be a master cook, to be able to do things that you'd say, if that was sitting on a table in a high dollar restaurant, I wouldn't complain about paying for it. Now, maybe I'm not at like a 3-star Michelin chef level with it, but a mastery goal. Ken has like 100 of those. And that's how he obtains them. He's developed enough freedom in his life to go out and like, I want to learn how to make cheese. I'll go be an apprentice cheesemaker for 6 free months. I mean, that's commitment. That's commitment. And y'all can learn from that. But I would say add to this, maybe figure, what is your mastery goal? And your mastery goal, this is going to be sounding weird. I'm going to quote a chick flick from like 30 years ago, maybe more than 30 years ago, because this was a woman that I was serious about before I met Dorothy. And I've been with Dorothy 29 years. Okay. She talked me into watching a chick flick called Hope Floats. Hope Floats. It's a terrible movie. I can't tell you what it's about. I don't remember, nor do I want to. I remember telling this gal, she said, but hope really does float. I said, so is shit. But there's this one part in the movie. There's this dude in the movie. Of course, the rugged, romantic, you know, kind of off-kilter guy that the girl eventually falls for. And she thinks he's like just some loser or something with his career and whatever. And she ends up somehow visiting his home. She goes in his home, and this guy is a master woodworker. I mean, the cabinets are like the kind of cabinets you see in a billionaire's house, but a rustic house for a billionaire. They are gorgeous, inlays, just beautifully, attention to detail. And she looks at it and she says, "My God, do you know how much money you could make doing this? What kind of life you could have if you did this?" And he says, "Yeah, great. So take the thing that I love and destroy it by commercializing it." I think you can do the thing you love as an enterprise without ruining it. I have for 17 years now. I love teaching, and I developed a way that I can teach every day that I want to work and not hate it. But it takes doing. But I think there are some things that you might want to develop mastery of that you keep for yourself and your friends and the people you care about and your family. And I think it's good for everybody to have one of those. And if you can have a bunch of them like Ken does, so much the better. Next up today, Dennis Allen says, "I'm building a winter homestead in Texas." Finally, good for you, bro. I love Dennis, man. He's awesome. He's an awesome guy. I'm glad to have you as a neighbor, but I also know where you're at. And I'm just going to say there's people in Tennessee closer to me than where I think Dennis is going to be, but I will still call you a neighbor if you're in my state. James White, another great dude, just here at the workshop. Thanks for the wine, James. Rebuilding my two mini greenhouses after 15 years, they're toast. Growing saffron in one of them just to try something new. Coordinate four couples for my drunk barter blanket thing. I know all about your drunk barter blanket thing. And like Levi had a little part in that, and so did some other people here that are even around today. So that's cool. And James is an awesome dude. James, do the saffron. Go for it. Don't love what I'm about to say next. Change that. But somewhere in all that stuff, you grow. Grow safflowers this year. Safflower, like you feed the birds. Safflower, they make oil out of it you shouldn't use. Grow safflower and use those petals as well. And you might find something out. Safflower is considered an ersatz for saffron. Saffron is very expensive, very exclusive, used for things like making paella to make that beautiful golden rice and all. And people get mad at me when I say this because of how expensive it is. I don't feel like there's much flavor to saffron. Like if I'm watching a cooking show, like, "They put too much saffron in there. It's too strong a flavor." What kind of bullshit are you smoking, right? You know, well, he's making shit up to make the show interesting or something, because I don't notice much flavor from saffron. Safflower, it's a brighter orange, and I notice a very distinctive and very beautiful flavor from it. So try both. Play Bit Patriot says, "Working on more video editing of YouTube shorts." Keep it up, man. Shorts are really the hottest thing in content creation today. So getting really good at that can definitely move toward an income. And then listen, it says, footnote from Packrat. Excitedly looked up marble crayfish marbacles. Only discovered that Tennessee is one of the 9 states that prohibit them. Can exfer the principle to another hardy species, of course. You can also just not worry about what Tennessee says and keep your mouth shut. It's a freaking crayfish. It's invasive. Yeah, damn thing invaded my tank, right? You do what you want that information, but I'm just going to say that sometimes I work with things that the state says I'm not supposed to work with. Just be responsible if you do. Comment, "I planted pole beans and a cherry tomato at the base of a mostly dead tree. They use the tree as a trellis." Yeah, make use of the infrastructure that nature has provided you. ChatGPT, that's art by Lee Murphy, but not a comment for discussion again. And Rachel has made it here finally from an undisclosed warehouse in Allentown. How you doing, Rachel? Good to see you here. I guess you'll have to catch up with what we already did, because we are about done, folks. This was a fun show. I try to do more fun, less serious shows this time of year. I want you motivated. I want you happy. I want you geared up for the family time so that you're ready and happy about the family time instead of like, "Oh, no, now we have to deal with everybody in the house." I want you to have fun with it. comment from James White, looked up safflower seeds. Baker Creek has them. You're a jerk. By the way, you can get them way cheaper than you can from Baker Creek, James. I'm just saying. You can buy those things from places to do cover crop mixes and stuff by the pound. Safflower is actually a fantastic spring into summer cover crop. Hugely attractive to pollinators. You get, like, one thing I'll tell you about safflower, be careful of how much of it you plant. They're related to, like, the artichoke family. And the cup that the flower kind of comes out of is spiny and sticky and hurts. It's not bad. It's not like sandburrs where, like, it stays stuck in you and then you have to pull it out or anything. But it's kind of pokey. And I do think there is a spineless or less spined version now of safflower as it's being used as a cover crop on commercial scale. So I'm just going to say, like, you can get a lot of safflower for a little bit of money versus paying Baker Creek for that little package. But if you want to try their variety, feel free to go ahead and do so. And the other nice thing about safflower, once you grow it and you let some of it fully mature to seed, you'll be able to harvest your own seed forever, because nothing that I know of really, unless you went out of your way, is going to cross pollinate with it. All right, I'm going to call it there on the comments and things and goals that other people have. I hope everybody's really motivated as we head into the holiday season with Thanksgiving next week. Remember, Chef Ken is going to be with me tomorrow. And if you want to ask questions of a world-class chef about how to make your Thanksgiving great, tune in. We're going to have a lot of fun. Of course, we'll talk turkey, as in how to cook it. Both, we're going to kind of open up with kind of a quick 5-10 minute how we recommend you cook your turkey and how we are doing our turkeys this year, which I think will be interesting. I can't tell you do what I'm going to do because I have a great, big, beautiful pellet smoker, and that's what I'm going to make my turkey on this year. But I'll tell you how to use your oven to do the same thing. I don't exactly know what Ken's going to tell you. I like to part my turkey out. Some people want to put that whole bird out in front of people. Hey, you can do that too. You can do both of those things. It all depends on what your goal is. I have some techniques. I'm sure he has some techniques. Then we'll talk about sides. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about some creative desserts. We'll talk about some good adult beverage, like wines to pair with dinner, maybe a little after the dinner whiskey tasting. Maybe Ken will share with you how to taste whiskey in a way that will blow your mind if you've never tried it. And if there's anybody that was here at the workshop where he walked people through how to do that, there were people that were like, I can't believe the difference. And by the way, you'll drink less whiskey and better whiskey and not more with Ken's method, because you will savor it in small sips over time instead of shooting it or trying to pretend you're tough. And I'll leave it to him. Like, it's his thing to talk about. But yeah, that's the other thing though. Manhattans go with everything. That's what Heather in Family Design says. Yeah, they do. A little bit too easy sometimes. My two favorite cocktails, right, are a Manhattan and an Old Fashioned, made with good whiskey, specifically rye. And I also like a good martini, but I try not to drink too many of those because they're straight punch to the liver type of thing. But we'll talk about a lot of fun stuff. Again, maybe some desserts and some hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that as well. Cooking is one of my passions. It is my personal mastery goal. Like, that's the thing that I work on taking to a higher level that I'm not trying to commercialize. I just want it for myself, my family, my friends, my loved ones. Anyway, I think that's a great way to be. On that note, item of the day today, you know, it is the time of year for cooking, so it's something that helps with that. And as I said, you'll see pretty much mostly up until Thanksgiving, my items of the day will be things that help you in the kitchen. Today is one of the best-selling items I have ever recommended as an affiliate and have listed at tspaz.com. It is the Hamilton Beach 3-in-1 electric egg cooker. I checked today. Lifetime sales. I've sold over 1,200 of these. I brought it to you less than a year ago. I brought this to you first on December 2nd last year, and I've sold over 1,200 of them. I've had zero complaints out of 1,200. That tells you it does exactly what I say it does, which is, yeah, it makes an okay omelet and some other things, but what it really does is boiled eggs, and when you peel them, they peel like you're peeling a freaking, like they're designed to peel. Like, it's like open a present. They just peel easy, and that's one of the biggest pain in the ass things for me is you do the boiled egg thing, and then you try to peel it, and the egg gets ripped apart and shit, and I don't like it. And I love to make deviled eggs, and they're a great hors d'oeuvre for Thanksgiving. And I give away a bunch of recipes in this. So if you already have a system for your eggs, you don't need one of these. You're one of the 1,200 people that bought one already. Don't buy it, but check out the recipes that I give you, including one that uses bacon, cheese, and not mayonnaise, rather avocado as a replacement for the mayonnaise. And those things are the bomb. And think of all the creative things you do. Maybe Chef Ken and I'll riff on deviled eggs for an appetizer for Thanksgiving tomorrow. Here's an example. I have not done this myself yet, but there's a place that I go eat down in Clear Fork, and they're kind of low country Carolina is their vibe. And one of their appetizers is a deviled egg. And they do the thing where, like, if there's four people at the table, you order it, they bring four pieces, unless you tell them to bring two for everybody. It's a three, they bring three, that type of place. And they do a deviled egg that my wife loves, and she's a tough sell on deviled eggs. And it even has little bits of golden trout eggs on the top of it. They are freaking phenomenal. So you can up chef things as much as you want. But this thing is awesome for day-to-day use as well. And boiled eggs are a great thing to have on that keto carnivore diet as well. And many of you keep birds. And the problem when we keep our own birds and we're using our own eggs is, since our eggs are so usually so fresh, they have very little evaporation. That's what makes them hard to peel. There's not much air gap in there. When the eggs are hard boiled and there's a bit of an air gap, it's easy to get that membrane. Once that membrane comes, they peel. And duck eggs are, that's true more of duck eggs than chicken's eggs. They can be harder to peel than a chicken's egg. This little device, this Hamilton Beach egg cooker, makes them perfect every freaking time. And it's like 20 something bucks. So consider picking one up. And if you have somebody in your life that's a foodie and you think they'd enjoy this, great Christmas gift. Great Christmas gift as well. With that, we are wrapped up again. Just real quick, Laws of Life, my book, is on sale for the holiday season. Consider picking up a copy for yourself and or someone you care about. You can just go to Amazon.com or go through TeaSpaz, and I'll get a couple extra cents per book. I've got the book hard copy knocked down, I think $3, and the Kindle knocked down $1. How long I'm going to leave it that way, I don't know. When I'm like, hey, that's enough additional sales this year, I'll put it back to the regular price. So pick it up on sale while you can. And with that, I'll sign off. Again, I'll catch you tomorrow at the same time, 12 noon. Chef Ken Daniels will be in the house, and we'll talk about making Thanksgiving awesome this year. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.